Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and my very own dump valve. It's David.
Hello.
Now, Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Now then,
That's useful. Yeah.
Hang on. We haven't introduced it yet. Secret guest.
I'm interested. Send me, I need a quote. Anyway, carry on. I'm very interested.
Go on, do that noise again, JP. What was that noise? So is that what a dump valve sounds like?
Well, it does in my head, but in reality, it probably doesn't. It's like, you know, from the rally stuff, I'm thinking like Subaru Imprezas, Evos, all those sorts of things. Go on, have a go, Dave. It's great. Try it. That's a misfire.
Yeah, is that a misfire? Go on, do it again. Let me learn it. Let me learn it. It sounds more like a horse, though, doesn't it? Like a very small horse. Jason, you know who will know what a dump valve sounds like, and that is our special guest today.
Well, do you know what? I think you might be right. I think he's probably got a brilliant impression of his own of a dump valve. Maybe dump valve he owns on one of his cars. Mm. So our guest today is a man who quite literally makes dreams come true. He's a TV presenter, a motoring journalist, a mechanic, and a musician, and he makes up exactly 50% of the teletalent on a hit TV car show, which I just love the feel
Me
of.
Too.
It's Car SOS. It is, of course, the one and only Fuzz Townshend. How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Hooray! I'm here.
And at long last,
tremendous guys. Yeah, I know. It's taken a while, hasn't it? I mean, you know, Dave has been sort of pulling me along. But I'm here now, and I'm very pleased to be here. So, did I just hear you talking about dump valves?
Or pop-off valves.
Well, you said dump valves. I mean, I can try and let me try and do an impression of one. It's going to be difficult, isn't it? I don't have a vehicle with a dump valve on. So I'm going to have a go at one anyway. I'm going to go. But how was that?
Sounds like you got a speech impediment.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit of a loose tooth actually, but you know what? Dump valves are for tossers, really, aren't they?
Yes, are they?
Come on, you don't need.
No, I agree.
Okay, you want your turbo to spool down and all that kind of thing, but let's face it. Come on, it's much better to have a big thumping old fashioned engine with a massive flywheel on the end of it that it's hard, makes it hard to change your straight cut gearbox and all that kind of thing. That's where the magic lies. Dump valve.
No, you want a small flywheel. You don't want a flywheel at all. You want nothing there.
Honestly, that's not the kind of vehicle I rock with. No, don't want it. Don't want it at all. Listen, I know you like to go fast. That's great, but the art is being able to drive something that is proper nadgery and slow.
See, I don't fully understand what a dump valve is, if I'm being awfully honest.
Okay, right. Okay, so what your dump valve is going to do when you've got your turbocharger spooling up, going really fast, and then quickly you want to drop the revs of the engine because you want to go to the next gear. But you want your turbo to sort of spool down so it comes in at the right point. So what happens is your dump valve dumps all that pressure. You put your foot on the accelerator again and up it spools again. Providing the pressure at the correct point.
Got it. You see?
Yeah.
We learned something new today, Jason. Well, you probably knew that already. I knew that.
Well, listen, I didn't know that.
Is dump valve knowledge is well known.
Yeah. Do you know what? I'd rather have a turbo which had boost all the time.
Yeah, well, why don't you have
it? Have you heard of turbo lag, Dave?
I have heard of turbo lag. And again, I'm not fully aware of what that is either.
Right, well, turbo lag is when you put your foot, because the turbo is driven by the exhaust gas.
Yeah.
So when you open the throttle, the exhaust gases are energized. They come out faster. That spins the turbo. And there's a time delay between it spinning up and producing pressure and that's turbo lag.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. We talk a lot on this podcast, myself and Jason, about music and cars. It always kind of, you know, I think they all sort of, it's all woven in together. And we'll talk more about that later. But going back to the beginning, that's kind of where it all started for you, wasn't it? Because as I read, and this may or may not be right, but didn't your mum win a Vauxhall Chevette and then took the cash equivalent and bought you a drum kit with it, which arguably is where, is that kind of where your whole kind of adult life sort of began?
Well, it's where the luck started, really, wasn't it? What happened was my mum was a short person, a chondroplasia, so what's more commonly known as dwarfism.
Right.
So she had never learned to drive a car, not because not because that's impossible for people of her build, but because it was going to be massively expensive. She was a single mum, you know, she didn't have any money. And then she did this competition. I think it was in the Daily Mail. She occasionally did a competition, and she was, I think, what they call a spawny get, which is somebody who has more than their fair share of luck. And so she was always good like that. And so she won a car. She won a Vauxhall Chevette. But instead of having the car, I mean, I really wanted her to have the car. I don't know why, but anyway. But she actually ended up taking the cash prize, which was £1,300, which was a lot of bread in December 1975.
Yeah, that's 15 grand now, isn't it? Probably.
Yeah. Well, I was quick to the front of the queue. I can tell you. I was very quick to the front of the queue, and so I said, "Mummy." I hadn't called her mummy for about 3 years at that time. Mummy.
She knew what was coming.
Well, would it be possible for me to have an electric guitar and amplifier? And she said, oh, come on then, I'll give you a treat. So we traipsed off to Woolworths. Woolworths. Now, this is how prepared I was for this. We went to Woolworths in Birmingham City Centre in the Bullring with a couple of my friends and went to the music department of the massive Woolworths there, because they used to have one of those. And and there was this electric guitar and amp that I'd seen sort of shining there. And I thought, this is it, because I wanted to be Jimi Hendrix when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Not dead, but actually, you know, a guitar virtuoso.
Legend.
Yeah. And I'd had guitars since I was about 6 years old. And I got to the music department. I stood there in front of the electric guitar and amplifier, and I remember it's this semi-acoustic fat-bodied thing with F-holes. It probably would have howled like a kid in a sweet shop, because it was a very cheap one. But anyway, I kind of stood in front of it, and then I looked over to the right, and there was a red sparkly drum kit. Now, I'd had a pair of bongos for a few years. As I'm sure a lot of young lads have a pair of bongos that they play with often. And then, so I'd played with mine.
No way, Dave!
There we are. See, Dave Vitti has got his
bongos. Oh, my God,
out.
That's brilliant.
Right, there we are. So,
I always have bongos.
Yeah, Fantastic. Well, I think I've got some here. I've got some right behind me as well, my bongos. Can we see your bongos, Jason?
I'll show you my bongos if you show us your bongos.
Yeah. Has he got on it? Here we go. Hold on, I'm going to get mine.
Like, yours are just like mine. Look.
Hey, look.
They are. Honestly, they are actually, they are identical. Now. Look.
Oh, no, that's not a bongo.
That's electronic.
A bongo, I can't quite see what you're holding up, but
it's a drum machine.
It's a drum machine.
I've lost the AC adapter, and I've not whacked it in, 10 years, 15 years, something like that.
Well, you know, if you've got your electric bongos in your hand, I suppose that's kind of, you know, that progress, isn't it?
I can't get over the fact that you've got the same ones as me, Fuzz.
Yeah. Well, I'd had some bongos, and I played along to the, you know, various records that I had at the time, and I was pretty good on the bongos. And I was absolutely terrible on the guitar, and I remain terrible on the guitar to this day, even though I love them. You know, look, I've got loads of bass guitar behind me. I'm absolutely bollocks on the guitar.
So Fuzz, so, you know when you're like watching TV or a bit of music comes on, or it could be whatever, are you constantly, because I find myself doing this, even if I'm in the car, you know, I'm like percussively tapping, or are you doing all that? Maybe I need bongos in my life, because
I think what happens is you start off like that, and then you sort of like become sort of proficient on them, and then that kind of irons it out a little bit, and then you just sort of like do the playing when it's appropriate, and not when you should have your hands on your steering wheel controlling your motor.
I mean, I've got my knees on it. There's no need to worry.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
how about you, Dave? Are you constantly?
I am. My dad was a drummer. My dad was a jazz drummer. So I've always sort of had this, you know, like you say, you know, this sort of rhythmic thing, which is why I was, you know, when I was a kid, I used to kind of like get a couple of my dad's drumsticks and I'd set some cushions and pillows and fold them over and make my own little drum kit, you know, out of stuff. And I always did that, but I'm still, you know, if I'm in the kitchen waiting for the kettle to boil, I'll be there sort of drumming on my legs and on my knees and stuff like that, or drumming on the worktop in the kitchen. I just do it all the time to the huge annoyance of anybody that's there with me. Isn't it just? Yeah. But I mean, but this is where, you know, so you got into drumming, and then you did it properly though, Fuzz. I mean, you know, you've made your own music. You were with Pop Will Eat Itself, Bentley Rhythm Ace. I mean, you've had a proper musical career.
Well, I have. I've got the drum kit, and what happened was, it just so happened that up the road there was this bloke called Alan Reed. Now he had sort of short dark hair, and he wore thick spectacles, and he looked very uncool as far as I was concerned, and he was a friend of my mum, which made him double uncool. So it just so happened that he sat me down and said, you know, looked at me sort of over the glasses kind of things, so you want to play drums, do you? And I was like, yeah I do, of course, you know. And he said, who's your favorite drummer? I went, oh, Ringo Starr. And he just looked at me and just sort of like tutted. And he said, there's loads better drummers than him. So I'll show you one. And he sat behind this kit. You know, this is a bloke in his 40s. Couldn't have been any more uncool to a little 11-year-old lad. And he just exploded on this drum kit. Mm. And after I finished picking my jaw up, I was like, my God, this is mate. I want to be able to play like you can.
Yeah.
So I kind of learned as a bit of a jazz drummer for ages. And then I went into the world of pop and rock kind of thing, and that was kind of, you know, he wasn't interested in pushing me in that way. But then I learned that he'd sort of like, he'd apparently taught people like Carl Palmer and loads of really, really famous drummers. And, you know, this guy was an absolute legend. So funnily enough, you know, he prepared me, absolutely prepared me. So by the time I was kind of 13 or 14, I was playing gigs and making money for it. And so I only sort of did my apprenticeship to have something to fall back on, really.
The theory behind, because this is what I was going to ask you in terms of the whole balance between, you know, two very distinct careers, if you like, sort of moving forward at the same time. You've got music on one hand, and then you've got, you know, the mechanical side of things on the other. So that was the fallback, was it? The mechanic sort of side was just in case the music didn't work out.
Well, kind of, but I was totally into the mechanical side of things. And I used to go up to my cousin John Wardrop's garage in Scotland, just outside Linlithgow. This was a little garage called Regent Motors, guarded by a fierce guard dog called Sultan. Who I was very pleased that I made friends with Sultan, because, you know, he was big enough to eat me at the time. But I kind of, you know, I made the tea. I got sort of put to work making number plates for cars that needed them, kind of thing. And also I was the fire watching cars when they were being MOT'd and being welded up for their first MOTs, literally being welded up for their first MOTs.
How funny is that? That sounds insane. That's doesn't it?
Cars being were welded back in the 1970s. They were totally crap, absolutely. And, you know, people say they don't build cars like they used to. Well, I'm bloody well pleased that they don't. I mean, you know, just drive them for 3 years and chuck them away was almost what it was. But so I was doing all of that. And so when I started my apprenticeship on the buses, because everybody knows buses is best. Or is that buses are best? Well, the bus is best.
Bus anyway, is best.
So when I started my apprenticeship, I was already playing gigs. So it was like a parallel kind of career progression, really. And so, yeah, the two went along together. And eventually I got qualified as a bus mechanic. Did a couple of years, and then I thought, right, I better, if I want to make a go of it as a musician, I really need to do it all the time. So that's what I did. Joined about five bands, started a record label, and pushed, and eventually started playing with Rankin Roger, who used to be in the Beat and General Public. Yep. Well, I joined General Public, and then that became Rankin Roger's solo band. So we went off around the States and all that kind of thing. So I got a taste of the good life.
My God, how amazing.
Amazing.
I know, that was great. And then he got an offer working with another band with some of the Specials. They were going out a Special Beat. And as part of that package, that came with Brad, who was the drummer out of the Specials. So that was me out on my ear. So I ended up having to go back on the buses, went back to Dudley Bus Garage.
And what period of time was this, Fuzz?
After 3.5 years of living the high life.
And what year was this?
1989, I went back to that.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because I know Brad, who you're talking about, who's sadly not around anymore. He died a few years ago, but he used to drink in the same local pub as I did in North London. He was a phenomenal drummer, but many a time, and normally after, you know, towards the end of the night when everyone's had a few too many, the same thing would always come up with me and a couple of mates and Brad, and it was trying to get the beginning of Too Much Too Young right. And it was like, you know, so what is it?
Yeah.
And or you know, sort of variations on that. I know it's not that, but it's sort of variations on that sort of whole thing, you know, with people, and trying to get it right. Go on, you do it. What, they started Too Much Too Young, that?
was that sarcasm, Dave?
Yeah, I think, I'm sure it was. You've done too much.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
But he would always kind of, everyone would have a go, and then he was the one. He was very sort of deadpan. He'd go, no, you got it wrong, and then he'd do it right on the bar. And that was Brad that you were talking about.
Well, there we go, yeah. So anyway, I he was a great drummer, but of course, that I was superfluous, and so I ended up going cap in hand back to the old bus garage, going, I don't suppose you've got any jobs. And they said, well, we never filled your vacancy, so welcome back. No way. Proper Groundhog Day stuff, that was. It was like, oh, no.
And how did, I mean, firstly, how did the TV career kick off, but also probably before that or after, you tell us that. Tell us the premise of Car SOS, because
for those
who haven't seen it, it's one of my favourite car shows, and I know you the same, Dave, because it's got such a lovely vibe.
It's got a heart.
It's got real heart, and you can see how much it means to these people. So perhaps I've teed that up at the start. Tell us the premise of that for those who haven't seen it.
All right, what we do is on Car SOS, we secretly take people's cars. So it might be somebody who's they might be ill, or they might just have been a good egg, or, you know, life's got in the way somehow. While they've been being a good egg, time's gone by, they've never got around to doing their car up. And so their car's just been sitting there in their garage, you know, or on their driveway for maybe 5 years or more. And we come along with the permission of their family or friends and secretly get it away from them. And over the following few weeks, we pull it apart, restore it, and give it back to them as a working, hopefully, working car.
I mean, I like the way you candidly say pull it apart, because I've seen some eps where there's nothing left of the shell.
No.
And you've ripped it to back to and discarded most of it and then rebuilt it.
Yeah, well, that does happen. You know, it just depends. I mean, normally if I go and recce the cars, if it's as bad as that, I say to the production company, you can't afford to do this. And then they ignore me and do it anyway. And then moan lots when it costs them lots of money. But at least that's out of my hands at that point.
Yeah, yeah. You've warned them, haven't you? Well,
yeah. I told you. So that's what we do. So it's secretly taking people's old classic cars, their cherished cars away, and doing them up for them. I hope in most cases that they wanted that to happen. Although there have been one or two where they've kind of gone, I was going to do that myself.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah. I can't tell you which ones, but there have been a couple. I mean, we've done 110 cars now, so it's a very, very small percentage.
That have said
I was going to do that myself, and what am I going to do in my retirement now?
I tell you what, almost every time I watch the show, a little thought comes in my head, and that is, how difficult is it to keep it all under wraps?
Yeah,
there must be loads of little hurdles and banana skins which you slip on almost a daily basis. Oh, it's out the bag. Well, how do you keep it so under wraps? Because it generally is, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So as far as we're aware, nobody has guessed while it's been happening. One or two people have had, on the last day or two when something weird has happened, one or two people have gone, something weird's going on here. I don't know what it is currently. But nobody's ever fully tumbled yet. So how to keep it under wraps? Really, a lot of people think that they'd know if something was going on, but they don't.
I think
it's very hard for the family who are involved, especially if they live in the same house as the person, because they're on eggshells. They're sort of like trying to avoid watching Car SOS and all that kind of stuff. So, which of course the person themselves might be properly into. So, their family's like a cat on hot bricks at this time. This can be, once we take the car away, it can be anywhere between sort of like 3 or 4 and maybe 10 weeks of having this vehicle away. So sometimes it's easy, sometimes people think, it's just been put away in storage while we're having the extension built, or, that kind of thing. But at other times, we've actually had to remove cars that have been sitting on people's driveways in front of their houses. And what we've had to do is take the car, swap the wheels over with another car, with a dummy car that we've got.
I'll put a ringer in there.
Yeah, put a ringer in there.
You did that with the Fiat Uno, didn't you?
Yeah, we did it with the Fiat Uno. We did it with a Mini Cooper as well. We've done it a few times.
I saw one where there was some tarp over it, and it was right next to the front door.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, there's no way they don't know, but they don't, do they?
They don't. No, they absolutely don't know. I mean, there was one car, we did a Jaguar Mark II, and the one wheel, the one brake was seized on. It would not let go. I clattered the living daylights out of it trying to release it and trying to get it up. But we have to work quick in those situations, so we had to drag it, and the tires weren't inflated. They were just like a pair of ragged old trouser leg kind of thing, and they just, so we actually carved a groove in the driveway.
No way.
And so somebody else had to come along, a friend had to come along to pretend to do something at their house and scrape a digger bucket along it or something like that.
that's the bit I love.
Otherwise, have you ever seen that scene in The Time Machine where they drag the time machine and they can see where they've done it, because it's kind of left the marks on the ground? It was a bit like that. So, but eventually we got it out of there, but I was sweating on the top line with that one.
That's the thing I love about that concept of show, where any number of things can go wrong. And if they do go wrong, you've got to sort it out, haven't you?
Mm.
You've just got to come up with a fix, like, oh, shit, there's a hole in the drive. What do we do with that?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's get me mate who's got a digger.
Yeah, exactly. So, it does have, so we've had to sort of like literally cover our tracks from time to time. It's a tough call. And then, of course, you've got to hit the ground running. When you've got the vehicle in, you've got to be able to sort of like make sure that You've got everything that you need for it, and you know, that can be difficult. So we have to sort of like lean on a lot of very kind you know, people and organizations and companies, businesses, and that, you know, and say, look, can we have everything that we need, that we might possibly need for this particular kind of car that you yeah. supply, and then we'll give you the bits back that we don't use, and all of that kind of stuff, because we've got to have everything there on the go so that we can hit the ground running, because, you know, some of these cars are proper yeah. old nails, really, not to put too fine a point on it, you know. So yeah, we've got to do it, but it's down to the people who work on it, you know, the team in the workshops that we use. They are absolutely magnificent. Without them pulling out the stops and also working loads of late nights, we would not get these done. But it's, you know, it's you know, often the car leaves the workshop, goes straight onto the trailer and straight to the reveal.
Yeah, no, and that's the magical bit, isn't it? You know, when you've seen all of the hard work and all of the different people involved as well in all of this, you know, not only you and all the production team, obviously you and Tim, but obviously the family to sort of keep the secret going and everything. And then when you do get the reveal, it's absolutely magic telly. And that's what you're hooked in for, and that's what you're invested in, and that's why it's such a good show. But Fuzz, I want to take you back personally to your own, you know, sort of car beginnings. Take us back to what was the first car for you then? Where did the love affair first begin?
Well, I mean, I had my mum's brother, my uncle Derek, always used to turn up. He had a castings business. It was based down in Surrey, Townsend's Castings. Very imaginative name there. But anyway, so Townsend's Castings. So he often used to have to deal with big foundries and stuff up in the Black Country. Yeah. So when he used to come up, he always seemed to have a different car. You know, one day it'd be a Wolseley 690, then it'd be a Volvo Amazon, then it'd be like a V4 engine for Transit, or then it'd be something. Just every time it was something different. They all, though, smelled of pipe smoke, because he smoked a pipe, and that was great. And there's no better combination on the interior of a car than a decent quality aromatic pipe smoke with a bit of leather.
Yeah. Do you know what? I can almost sense that.
So I got to experience loads of these different cars, but also cars back then used to have a sound. You know, I'm talking when I was a kid, I'm ancient now, but when I was a kid in the late 60s, early 70s, I could tell cars that were going past my house just by their sound. Yeah. I think that's a lot more difficult nowadays. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly some do. But, you know, just if an MGB went past and knew what it was, if a Ford Cortina Mark I went past and I knew what it was, I didn't even need to see it. And so I just kind of got not just into the sight of the vehicle, but it was also the smells, the sound, and just every aspect of them. And it just grew with me. But of course, my greatest love was buses. But forget that. But my cars, I just knew what they were as they were going past. And then eventually I managed to persuade this is after I got my drum kit, because I was a greedy kid. I eventually managed to persuade my mum to loan me. enough money to buy a Ford Anglia, which was an MOT failure, and I had dreams of doing this car up and it being ready for my 17th birthday, but that never happened, because before I was even 16. It was on the back of a Henry Tyrone's tow wagon going off for scrap, and I would like to say that, you know, the adverts always said I'm going to get in trouble with the family now, but the advert said £10 for £10 minimum for every scrap car, and the bloke came and saw mine, and he went, I'm not going to give you any money for that. I'll take it away for nothing though.
I don't think.
Yeah, for nothing. I was properly wounded, but I just thought, well, you know what? Maybe I've swerved a bill there. Anyway, so it got taken off then, because I also had a foster mum. I had two mums, so it kind of gets a bit complicated. Mm. Just go with it.
Yeah.
And so I'd been a foster kid, so I used to see my I used to see my real mum at the weekends, and I was in a foster family during the week. And by that time, only my foster mum was alive, and she had bought a brand new Ford Fiesta 1.1L in dark blue, and so I learned to drive in this Ford Fiesta, and she said after I passed my test, she said, you know, if you look after it, if you pay for the insurance and all of that kind of thing, you can have this car. Wow. Well, you know, and I passed my test in November 1981. So I've got like I'm the kid with the almost new car, almost new car. You know, what more could a teenager of 17 want than an almost new car? 2 years old, and even hit its first MOT.
Hey, Fuzz, do you still remember the registration?
YOK80T.
Dave is an avid registration memoriser, and you've got one too. How brilliant is that?
The Ford Anglia was 803BOL.
We have this conversation a lot actually on here, Fuzz, because Jason thinks that I'm a bit strange because I remember the registration plate of every car that I've ever owned, but also every car that my dad ever had, or anything to do, any car within the family all the way through my life. From about the age of 3 or 4, I remember the registration to this very day. Yeah, and I think that's O-O-H normal, but maybe it isn't.
AOH 722K, TON 638N.
There you go, look.
All of them, they're all there.
Mm. See, I'm not saying it's not normal, but it is in my mind. In my mind, because I can't remember. I think it's amazing and really quite lush, actually, that you can remember, you know, its name, if you like.
Mm. Yeah, but you're just setting yourself up for disappointment, aren't you? Because you know, as soon all that happened was we've retained these registration numbers in our heads all this time, all of this information about all of these cars, all of these vehicles, and then along came the computer, along came the internet, and we were able to find out that they'd all been scrapped.
You can't you?
Yeah, and I do that on a regular basis. If I've got nothing else to do, I'll sometimes have a little look back and I'll kind of go, I wonder if that Capri that I had, I wonder if it's still on the road. No, I wonder if that Cortina, I know, Golf GTI that I had, no, that's gone as well. You know,
But they've been buried and they've had a really nice life and they've gone to the car afterlife, haven't they? That's the thought process.
Not if I own them, they haven't.
Apart from the Anglia, that's just rotten.
Absolutely. Now, I mean, the thing is, I'm sitting here, Fuzz, and I'm trying to work out in my own head, right? Because obviously we know about your mechanical background and obviously the telly show and you're mad on buses, but I'm fascinated, and I've got no idea what this is. I would be fascinated to know what your daily drive is these days. What do you, you know, what do you go out in? What do you go to Tesco's in? What's your car?
Well, I quite often go out. Hold on, let me just show you what I've got lined up outside here to go to the shops in. Where are we? Here we go. Oh, I don't know if you can see that. Hold on, but I'll open up the window. Everything's going to fall off the. Pull off the window ledge here. Right,
it's like through the keyhole, isn't it? Oh my word, what's that? What is it?
What's that? That's a 1933 Riley 9 Monaco.
Limey.
Sounds amazing.
So herein is my point, Jason. It's because I didn't think that, you know, he was going to be driving a Hyundai Tucson or something or whatever. I knew that it was going to be something away from the norm, you know, something a little bit more interesting. And indeed, you know, with that Riley that you've just shown us out there, then, you know, that's what we thought.
Yeah, it's only a way of making dull blokes a bit more interesting, isn't it? But I do get stopped by a lot of old blokes in ill-fitting cream sweaters, and they do spend a long time talking to me in the supermarket car parks. But that's all right, because I like those kind of people. You know, that's my kind of
nothing wrong in that, mate.
No,
nothing wrong in that.
But I also the newest car that we actually own is a Ssangyong Corando.
Okay.
let me just get that in my head again. A Ssangyong Corando. I've heard of the Ssangyong Dark Horse. Is that a car? No, Wuxum Dark Horse.
No, that's a tire. I've now sort of had a little word with the guys at Ssangyong, and they've loaned me a Rexton.
That's one. I always think sounds too much like the Ssangyong Rectum.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that. That's why I was very clear about it.
Come on, bud. Give us an honest appraisal of the Rexton.
The Rexton. Yeah. Well, put it this way. I sail past many a Range Rover and a Jaguar.
No way.
I do, yeah. Well, they're all sat there with all their faults on, the lights on and all that kind of stuff. that thing just keeps going. I never have any bother with it. And the Corando, I mean, it's 10 years old now. It's a 13 plate. No bother at all.
I can remember the first time I saw one on a motorway about, I don't know, probably about 6 or 7 years ago. Yeah. And literally, I'm driving. And you know when you instantly recognise the silhouette of a car or the rear lights? Because we're those sorts of people who can conceal that. And I'm looking at it, it's coming at me, and I'm coming at it. I'm thinking, what the hell is that? And I've spotted the badge. I'm like, never seen that before. And I didn't know what it was. And then the weirdest thing is that happened again not that long after. And that was the Polestar. And I did that with the Polestar. I went, what is that? It looks like a Volvo. Well, it's not a Volvo. It's a what?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, they're kind of coming out of the woodwork, a lot of these cars, and there's sort of a bit of a sea change because, you know, some of the older brands are not living up to people's expectations, and some of them are not moving quickly enough, others are they're just kind of getting slightly wrong footed because we've got all this change going on now, and I think it's quite a good fun time to see what's developing because let's face it, I mean. When Dale Winton was giving away Kia Prides on Supermarket Sweep back in the 1990s,
well, there's an image.
Every single one of us was going, a what?
It's a good point you make, actually. They make really quite good cars now.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that's the whole point. But back, in, you know, 30 years ago, people were going, I'm not having one of them because they're going to be rubbish. But they weren't rubbish, and now they've taken over the world.
Hey, Fuzz, here's a question for you. Where do you stand on electric cars?
Well, I don't know. Wherever it's safe to do so. Holy joke, you get that? Now, where do I stand on electric cars? Electric cars are great. Now, I have an electric motor scooter. I've just passed my CBT two or three days ago. I did. Yeah, I'm going on to two wheels. I'm giving it a go. Although the more I do research on it, and you know, I've got my theory test tomorrow, and I've been revising like crazy today. And the more I go into it, they really try and discourage you from going on the road. It's dangerous. Yeah. I think motorbikes might be dangerous. So anyway, but I've got an electric Sayat Mo. So it's a little motor scooter rated at, you know, 125cc would be its rating if it had an engine, but it's an electric version. So
and what's it like?
I'm now legal to ride that kind of thing, and I think things like that are great. You know, it'll do sort of 60 miles per hour, and it's got a range of, you know, around about 80 miles. Now that's great because I'm not gonna go from Land's End to John O'Groats on that. No. Although maybe I should.
You are mad enough to do that.
I would love to do something like that. I would love to go from Land's End to John O'Groats or around the whole coast of Great Britain or somewhere or other, only using electric vehicles, but never the same sort of vehicle again. So, I'd have to use a milk float, a trolley bus, an electric scooter, an electric skateboard.
Fuzz, if only you knew a TV production company and a channel that might be interested in this as a program, you could actually do that as a series, surely.
Yeah. Listen, I've tried them. They just look at me and just to go, well, no.
I know what's wrong.
A returning format. I know what's wrong. A returning format.
You're turning up in the rectum, aren't you? Ditch the rectum. Right, don't turn up for these production meetings, pitches. In the rectum.
Okay, so turn up on my Seat Mo. Okay, I'll do that. I'll do that. So, but anyway, so electric cars, I think they're great. You just have to plan differently, don't you? It's a bit like having a steam car. You've got to have. You've got to know where you're going to get your next bucket of coal from. Yeah, but you can still do it. You can still have a steam car. You can have an electric car, but you've just got to know where all your charging points are and if they're all working and all that kind of stuff. So just plan your route. But ultimately, you know, probably if you're doing lots of long distances and stuff like that, surely something that utilizes a kind of free-flowing, transportable fuel source is going to be the way forward. And I guess that has to be either hydrogen or of course, synthetic fuels, you know, synthetic petrols and stuff like that. Or, of course, I don't know, if you can charge your phone by just plonking it on top of something, surely dig up all the roads and put charging points all the way along the service. I don't know, something like that. So people who are far more clever than I are going to come up with that. And besides that, by the time they've dug those up, I'm going to be dead, so it doesn't, I don't care.
Isn't it funny for us, talking about coming sort of full circle before, is that when you talk about stuff, and as you say, electric cars are the future, and maybe even sort of roads that could charge the cars, and it's the complete opposite emotionally and everything to what you were describing before, which is obviously the old cars, and you were talking about that, you know, sort of that concoction, that sort of heady smell of leather and pipe smoke and oil.
Well, you still have the leather and pipe smoke, although it's very difficult to get your pipe tobacco now.
Yeah, but you know, but this is the one thing that, you know, we always say about electric cars is that much as we understand that they're sensible and they're their future, but they don't have the same emotion and they don't kind of hark the same memories that we have with if you like, traditional cars. And a lot of that is to do with sounds and smells, isn't it?
I'd like to argue against that, Dave, because, I mean, have you noticed how the electric Porsches, do you remember that program, that cartoon, Wacky Races?
Of course.
Do you remember the creepy coupe, which was like the Munsters kind of had that sound as it went along?
Yeah.
Don't those Porsches sound like the creepy coupe?
They've got that kind of feel to them, haven't they? That synthesized noise they put out.
Yeah, exactly. It's the creepy coupe. Every time I hear one. So actually, that's quite a good thing because they're a recognizable sound. I don't think that the designers at Porsche realized that they were copying the sound of the creepy coupe from
the true story of that
from 1968.
Do you know the true story of that noise from Porsche in their Taycan? When they developed their Le Mans car, which is the hybrid car, when it was on electric, the drivers, they lost a sense, and they found that by creating this artificial synthesized noise and tuning it in a racing environment made the drivers drive faster.
Oh, right.
Really? And that's what, and that's where they took their inspiration from. And it's a similar sort of noise which they pipe through the earphones of the drivers.
Yeah,
yeah.
The creepy coupe from 1968.
Yeah,
blimey. Well, there
is that amazing?
It is amazing. Okay. It is amazing. And listen, as we are, Jason, we are just about running out of time slightly, but we talked about music earlier on and music and motors. I want you to ask Fuzz the final question because there's a thing. I think this is sort of tailored almost perfectly for you, Fuzz, in terms of your career and your life and everything mixed together.
As Dave said earlier, he kind of teased you up for it.
Yeah.
We want a fantasy drive, okay? And we want to know where you are, where you're going to, what are you listening to, and most importantly, what are you driving?
Okay, fantasy drive. Oh, this is a very, very good, very good question. So probably I'm going to go for a pre-war car of some sort. Maybe I'm going to go for a pre-Derby Bentley, but not one of those open racing lorries. I'm going to go for a rakish sports saloon. And you know, with that great big thumping 4-pot engine, maybe, or something like that up ahead. And so I'm going to go for that. And the, what am I going to listen to as I go? Well, where is it going to be? It's going to be around the entire coast of Great Britain. And then I'm also going to go all the way around Northern Ireland and all the way around the Irish Republic, all the way around there. I want to keep going for as long as I possibly can, because I want to be able to, I want to know my way around the coast absolutely intimately. And there's lots of switchbacks, lots of driving to be done. Don't need to go fast, and I'm going to have brilliant views all the way around. So that's where I'm going to go. And you know what I'm going to listen to? What's going to be on the soundtrack? I'm not going to have a radio or anything in there, because I want to listen to the engine and that gearbox. I don't want to hear anything.
Oh, brilliant.
I don't even want Radio 4, which is what I often listen to, if I'm honest. But I don't want anything. I just want to hear what's going on with that magnificent vehicle. I want to see the views. And occasionally, I want to stop off at proper fish and chip shops.
Oh, do you know what? Fish and chips
cooked in beef dripping.
Yes.
Oh,
can we come too, please? Yes. I mean, the idea of being by the coast somewhere, you know, and eating proper fish and chips and then maybe a couple of cold beers at the end of it, that sounds perfect, doesn't it? You know, yeah, and you're right about the whole music thing. I mean, even the other day, I went through a tunnel, and I kid you not, I turned the radio off. As I was coming up to this little tunnel under the motorway, right, I turned the radio off and I put the windows down.
Oh, nice.
And then I floored it, right? Because I thought, it'd be a waste otherwise. There's a tunnel, you know, and I've got a big silly exhaust on the back of it. You want to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got to say that those Kia Prides, they sound magnificent with the windows. I would do the same if I had one.
I tell you what. Yeah, absolutely. It was a very, very sexy moment. And on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Well, sadly, we do have to go. And that's about it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, thanks to you, but a huge thanks to our special guest this week, the one and only Fuzz Townsend. Thank you so much, mate.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us, as always, on Twitter, at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you've liked what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, folks, and we'll see you next time. Ta-da.